Hello and welcome to episode 68 of Champion the Gamer. I'm delighted to be joined by Arrivia, otherwise known as Arrivia Gaming or Arrivia Accessibility. How are you, first of all?
Oh, I'm doing good. Tired in the heat. Like, I don't think I'm allowed to do this as a Norwegian. I should be so solely glad that we have anything that is called sun. I live in a town where it rains 250 days of year. So, like, I should be happy about this, but no, I'm melting away. I'm melting it away. But how are you holding up?
About the same. We don't like heat here either,
No.
apparently. And trying to hold a controller alone is a difficult task.
Yeah. I have
But
sweat places I didn't know I could sweat.
oh, don't! It's horrendous. It's such a struggle. It really is. I'm so looking forward to this because there's so much I want to ask you, and there's stuff I've been thinking about for so long to ask you. But let everyone know who you are, what you do, and all of that.
Yeah, hello everyone. My name is Revia. I'm a disabled and chronically ill content creator and accessibility advocate from Norway. I've been doing streaming and content creating now for 6, 7 years or something like that. But I think 2 years ago I did a big like shift in the content creating I did and went from doing a lot of just retro games and makeup streams and stuff like I really enjoyed to more focusing on accessibility. And the reason for that was because I have something called arthritis and I'm born with something called cerebral palsy. And with age just comes the consequences a lot of times when you are chronically ill and disabled of things starting to be harder to do. And I was streaming one day and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. It's too painful. And my community were just like, but there are ways you can still do it. I started researching and I fell into a rabbit hole I have never been able to climb out of. I absolutely love everything about accessibility now, and it is my life passion.
What's the most surprising thing you found, you think?
Oh, that's a good question. I think actually most surprise is a bit like twofold because I work as a consultant into the game industry. So one thing I'm more surprised with when it comes to the industry is how much you can do with extremely little. Like when it comes to gaming, because we interact with a medium, you are able to do so many changes on a like a string shoe budget. Like you don't need to do the fancy big ass things you see the big games does. It's just like, I don't know, if you have a first person game, give the opportunity to take off head bobbing, which is a really simple thing to do in programming, and then people won't be motion sick. Motion sick is something that we assume at least 30% of the all population has problems with it, but we know that it can affect up to 100%. So if you get too much stimuli into your eyes, you can be motion sick no matter what. And when it comes to more like the general, like gamers in general, it's just that I don't think people understand, or I get so funny that people go like, yeah, but I don't need accessibility, they say, as they do the volume slider or put on subtitles. I think so many people think accessibility is just something like out there or for quote unquote those kinds of people, like those disabled people or those with like extreme needs, which is also it's made for those. So of course it is for everybody, but it is made for people. It is made for everybody to use. So if you are like me, which are those people, those disabled people, it can also help you who are just sitting there and just, I don't know, getting old or need to have a game a bit more quiet.
I think as well for me, it's sort of a bit of a weird tangent, but where I come from the sport world, and I would have probably been 14, 15. I did the disability games down by me, and it was such an eye-opener and amazing. I'm working with people that weren't even necessarily what you would in the olden days call disabled. You couldn't see anything about them that was any different, but they're in a wheelchair playing basketball. And it's like there's something there that no one knows about, but they still have it. And so it really opened my eyes to the idea of like you can't always see things
No.
straight away. And then people, every single person has something, like I said, the volume knob or like whatever it is. There's always someone that's looking for something to make it easy for them.
Yes, because like accessibility, yeah, we are made for it's something called a curb cut effect. So if you ever go out and you see like the sidewalks and then you see a little like curb or a cut out in the sidewalk that is made for wheelchair users to get on and off. But it also helps other people. It helps if you're on a bicycle or a skateboard, if you have delivery, if you need to, yeah, like some cars, you can't like do all up of these like high pavements. Everybody uses them. And that is called the curb cut effect. It just says if we help those who needs it the most in design, we help actually a plethora lot of people. And which is why, like, when you make a game or when you do something, if you think about those who need it the most, you will think about a lot more people than what you imagine in the first place.
And then pair that with your content a little bit. Now, you mentioned obviously just earlier that you do stuff around all this, but how do you use your content to bring light to all that?
Well, it is a bit like it's hard because sometimes people just don't necessarily understand. But I do it in a fun way. I do the typical TikTok thingies. You mime after a song, the funny things. It's just fun. A lot of us does it. I love it. I think it's silly fun. But also do a lot of like educational content in just the form of like have that hook and line where I have a hook with something maybe a bit like, oh, I what are you talking about me? Because I say something that makes people start thinking. And also I do the typical somebody has said something horrible and now I make fun of it in a lightful way, but I make sure that I always tell them or why they are wrong and why it, with actually education. I don't put people out there. I always like take away their name, I take away their profile picture. I don't have any need to put other people out there, but what they said is still stands online. They haven't deleted their comment. So I'm going to use it as a rage bait to actually educate people. And it's a lot of fun. I think this comes with age, but I'm at an age where things doesn't faze me anymore in that way. So like when people say stupid shit, I just know it's stupid shit. I don't think about it. I don't go to bed and think about it. I just laugh and I'm just like, hey. I think the most fun thing I had was somebody who was so against a game having accessibility. Like his comments ended up being like miles long on Threads. And it was comment after comment after comment after comment before I even had started to answer one of them. And then I went into his profile picture and he was a dude with glasses. So he was there sitting there being like red-faced angry over something that also applied to him, just ended up saying, starting like saying, oh, you're one of the, you're one, you're in my group. Congratulations. Welcome to the club. And yeah, he ended up in the end deleting all his stuff though. But I could make use it to educate other people about like, hey, a lot of us have bad eyesight, and that is accessibility. Your need for glasses, you need for contact lenses, you need for bigger text. That is accessibility. Welcome to the club. We can make you have fun as well.
I love how you do all that. Like you put a video out recently, which was you guys made me do this, and then reneged it straight away just to have a hook there to
Yeah.
everyone watch it. I love that sort of thing. It's that satirical off my shoulders, just relax and have fun with it type vibe. Because my
Yeah.
question was going to be about that. You said you mentioned your age earlier. I was like, have you always had that level of patience for things though, or has that kind of come with age?
No, not at all. I have a lot of things. Like, let's just say I am at the psychologist right now trying to figure out why my brain does my brain. So, like, and dealing and growing up. So, having cerebral palsy is a brain damage you get the first year of your life. I got it when I was born. And cerebral palsy is just like lack of oxygen, or you a baby hits his head, you get a bit of a damage to your brain, and that affects you. It some of us it affects body, like people can shake or they can have trouble using their muscles and tightness and stuff like that. But I have a quite a mild case of it. But that doesn't mean it doesn't affect me. It just isn't visible for people when I'm walking down the street. And when it comes to oh God, what was I going to say? This is perfect. You can see me getting brain fog and forgetting what I was supposed to say. And when I was a teenager, so long story short, I'm born in the 90s. And in the 90s, the doctors were just like, oh, but you look healthy. just don't tell her she's different, and she will just learn to live like a quote-unquote normal person, because that was what they said. I grew up, didn't know I had a disability, hate teenager years, struggled massively. Like, I could run, I could walk, there is no problem that way, but my body just didn't act the way it other people around me acted, and I felt quite alienated. And in the end, my mom and dad was just like, we have to tell her. The doctors have said we shouldn't. We have to tell her. We can't continue this. I learned about this, but then I had grown up time after time after time after time believing that I was the problem, believing that I just didn't do human well. And with cerebral palsy, it is also under the umbrella of neurodivergent. And it's like, okay, I'm already acting different, but I don't have the emotions capacity or the knowledge or the words to understand or tell myself or others around why I'm acting different. I feel like a freak. All I do every single day is use massive energy to pretend I'm something I'm not, because I pretend to be a human like everybody else, even though I feel something is wrong, but I don't have the words or means to tell. So I started doing that. But even though my mom and dad told me, it took me 10 years before I first went to the hospital to learn more about my my illness, disability. And that, when I was 25, 26, that is when I had to start unpacking all of this. And you top that with medical trauma and PTSD and all of that, I was face first into having to learn how to deal with it. 4 years of going to a psychologist, learning how to deal with it, and you need to learn to deal with it, because you can't continue being angry at everything, sad of everything. You can't continue having all these extreme feelings of things. So I had to learn. Now I am 33, soon to be, and have done all that learning. So now everything is good, and I can laugh of it, and I can have fun with it, and I can, yeah, just have a nice life around it. But it didn't come by itself, because, and I think that has a lot to do with my upbringing and stuff like that. I think it's better to tell kids when something is wrong, because then they know. But that was just the cards I've given. That everybody of us is given different cards, good cards and bad cards. That was my bad cards. I had to deal with them, as we all have to do. And I think that's normal, though, for most grown-ups. You get dealt cards that are hard to deal with. And when you are over 18, it is your responsibility to start dealing with those, hopefully with the help of the community around you. So, yeah.
At what point in that journey does gaming come into it?
Oh, it's been there all my life. Holy hell. So it's so weird. My mom and dad, like, and please do not take it as my mom and dad did anything wrong, because they didn't. They just followed the guidelines of the doctors. Like, they did what parents should do. They listened to people more experienced than them and followed it. But my mom and dad saw, like, gaming was like my favorite thing. And we used to have a cabin, quite typical Norwegian thing. And I was not allowed to have my PS1 at home. I was only allowed to have it on the cabin, because my mom and dad was just like, gaming, not at home. You can have your Game Boy at home, but not your PS1. So every single weekend we went to the cabin. And after I had gone to on a trip or like done like some kind of activity outside, I was allowed to play on my PlayStation. And I absolutely loved it. Because imagine, right? Like, you are in a world that is not made for you. You don't get any accessibility, even though you need it. You're just told, face it or be bullied. Face it or teachers are going to get angry. Face it or people are going to think something is wrong with you. So you face it. And you have all of this extra stress that nobody understands why you're such a... I wasn't a hard kid to do, but I was a particular kid. Like, I was really like, imagine like having like this, I stopped going to kindergarten because I couldn't deal with it. I couldn't deal with handling other children around me. Like, it's weird. But then came gaming. And if you did a mistake in gaming, you just reset. If you do a mistake in gaming as a kid, you just try again. Yeah, you lose life. You get a penalty. But you don't actually get the consequences of, like, you're not allowed, which you do in society. in society, when kids doesn't act up, they get shunned, they get bullied, they get put out there. But in gaming, you can just exist. You can just be the one you are. You can just have fun and you can just relax. Yes, you have to learn how to do it, but the guidelines of how to do right and wrong are often quite easy. And if you do a mistake, you can just try again. The game doesn't say, ha, you tried 5 times, now we're never going to let you play it again. So for me, gaming growing up was like a freedom thing. It was like something like, here I can just exist the way I want to exist, with my emotions, with my brain injury, with my physical problems, and it's okay.
We've had, so I've got, I mean, I've got so many points, but we've had Penguins fan on, and he won't mind me saying it because we actually spoke about it between us, but he's got autism, and he's, you know, he's open about that, and he shares his journey with that, but he takes things from games. So like Lara Croft Tomb Raider, he has attached himself to that character because of how brave she is and the journey she has and everything. And I love the fact that games can do that. And the more and more I chat to people like yourself and just everybody, really, you learn that those connections can be made through games and with games. So I love that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And my follow-up question to that was going to be, and we can mention it a bit later because I've obviously got questions later, but where you've got this connection with playing games when you were a kid and it was your escapism and everything. Okay, yes, on one hand, it's really helped because it's given you escapism and stuff like that. But have you ever found yourself, now that you're a bit older, celebrating the journey you've been through?
Oh, yeah. So I don't look at life in a way of like, this shouldn't have happened. I have learned later to, this is actually a TikTok I saw once, which actually I loved. There was a lady who went through a divorce and she talked about the feelings of dealing with a divorce. And she said that she looks at life as a book. And in a book, you have chapters. Some are long and some are short. Some are hard and some are easy. Some are wins and some are fails. But everything of that makes your book. And that is how I look at life. You need to go through all of these things. I need to have the positive things and the negative things. I do not believe that you can't celebrate positive things if you haven't had bad things, because that is weird. Like, I think people here in a quote-unquote easy country to live in, like Norway, has it a jolly good time. In the same way, I think people who has actually experienced real struggles in life can also experience a jolly good time. It hasn't an effect on like how you take things today, but I just look at it as, yeah, chapters.
Just because you said it yourself, you're an advocate for certain things and you're this front and center voice for a lot of people that watch your content and stuff like that. And I wondered if there's ever a point where you, not necessarily a long time, but you take a deep breath at sometimes and look at yourself in the mirror and say, I've achieved something here. I've come out the other end of stuff and I've actually achieved, I'm proud of myself here. Do you ever have that moment?
Yeah. Especially like I do look at, so I've worked with a lot of big studios. I've worked with a lot of big names. And like one thing is to be working with them as content creator, which is really, really fun. Like I've been working with Xbox and PlayStation and Bethesda and all of these big things. But then I've also been able to be a consultant for large company and see people sitting there and see people go, oh my God, this is, why didn't I think about it? Like when you can sit with a human and you can tell your story, and because like my story is sort of what they call a bit like inspirational porn. I use it sort of to make people think because it's smart to do that. But in itself, I had a good childhood. Like, come on, I had a good life. Again, I am a privileged white woman in Norway, in one of the safest systems in the world. Like, I had it nice. But then sitting with a developer and telling my story, and then I can see it, like they go, okay, yeah, I understand your story. But then I can twist it into starting to understand accessibility where they feel that accessibility can be something that hits them as well. And doing that, being able to see that, because you can see it in the eyes of people. You can, when like the light bulb moment of going like, oh my God, I understand. that you can see it in people's eyes. And doing that is something is always fun. And it's of course, like when I think about it, like I sat playing these games as a child. Like I remember when Doom, when I was a kid, and then last month I was like thinking about it. I did Doom promotion with Bethesda. Like that is cool. That is cool because if I could tell 9-year-old me, like, girl, you will actually work with these people when you're older. So yeah, I have a bit of a tangent, but I really, because you're saying something there, and I really, really want to tell the story, if I'm allowed to just tell a story.
Us.
Some years ago, when I started doing more public speaking, so I do a lot of public speaking about accessibility and disability. I went to something called Retromessa, which is like the retro convention for retro games here in Norway. And at that convention, Chris Marlowe and John St. John was there. So John St. John is the voice actor for Duke Nukem. And Chris Marlowe is he works for Rare. He is one of the original makers of these all these amazing characters. I think Banjo-Kazooie, but like all these big games. If you played games in early 2000s, you played something from these guys. And like Kevin Bailey was also there. He's the maker of Donkey Kong. And I came into the green room. So every time you have something on stage, often they have a room for people to go and relax before they go on stage, call it the green room. So I go into the green room and all of these people were here, these three and also others. And they turn around and they look at me and they ask, "Hey, who are you?" I think maybe they thought I was part of the volunteers because I was at the age of the other volunteers and they had never seen me before. And I was just like, "Oh my God, these are my heroes from my childhood." And I looked at them and I went like, "Oh no," shaking as I did and going like, "I know, I'm going to have a talk." And they were just like, "Oh, you're also one of the people going to do a talk." And I was just like, yes, I am. They like asked me to come over, let me sit down, started talking to me, had a lot of fun. John St. John recorded like a voicemail to my husband because my husband couldn't join me. So he bullied my husband on a voicemail. It was brilliant. But then they asked me, "Okay, but what are you going to talk about?" And I looked at them and I was so new. And all I have heard before from online was that accessibility and easy mode, we hate it. The gaming community hate accessibility. The gaming community hate easy mode. And I look at my heroes and I close my eyes and I say, "I am going to have a conversation with people here today about accessibility." And all of them looks at me, like really look at me, going now, "Oh my God, I wish we had better technology when all of our games came out so we could add everything." You have the old schoolers, the big dogs, the biggest of biggest in our industry, looking at me and going like, "What you do is really cool." And that day, everything of like, I think that day was day of like unsurrealism. But also the day I lost a bit of like, what does it actually matter if somebody online who doesn't actually know this think that this is stupid, when the people who it actually is important for and the people who makes the game think it's really, really cool. And I think that's the best experience I've had so far.
It's priceless, right? Because
Yeah.
you know that you're making waves with people that, it's the wrong phrase, people that matter, people that you've seen from your childhood that have had this massive impact on you and that have got potential for that in the industry. So
And
to get that reaction must be amazing.
yeah, and it gave me like the motivation to continue because they all, and then you get all these small comments saying like, "Oh, I didn't know I could play this game. Now I can finally play it. Oh my God, I didn't know that was a setting. Now I can play my favorite game." Like all of these small comments from people all around the world where you say, "Oh, I might not be big. I might not be a big streamer or a big content creator, but it's impact. What I do is every single day, I make somebody smile or somebody happy. I make somebody feel welcome and not alienated before. I make a space every single day that childhood Elizabeth, before I was a Revia, before I was a grown up, needed. I am making a space that if anybody is even close or have something similar to what I experience, they can come and they can learn and they can feel welcome."
I'd love to hear it, because that's obviously what we'll strive for and we claim we strive for, is to create that space everyone can feel safe in. And it's obvious how much you're succeeding, because it's indescribable how magnetic it is, how the stories just fascinate people. And I just can't wait to see what you do next. And we can get back into some of that later, because I've got some questions on that, which I'm so excited for. But the next portion is a hot takes and sort of debates. Now, we do hot takes, and if you've got any gaming hot takes, please fire away.
Oh, I did a Norwegian podcast once, and I had a hot take that haunts me to this day. I remember once I said like, but I don't think if I know if it is a hot take or I believe in that hot take. But I remember, so my favorite game ever is a game for PS1 called Tomba. Or Tombi, depending on where you are. And I looked the host in the eyes and I said, Tomba, it's like Zelda, just better. And the amount of comments I got. But now I actually ended up doing Zelda for Sabaton last year. And oh my God, those games are actually amazing. So I can't say that anymore. I don't know if I have like a biggest hot takes. The thing is just that I say a lot of things and then people go, oh, that's so brave of you to do. And I'm just like, I think I'm just thinking normal human things. And then everybody else goes, oh, wow. So I don't know. But like, I don't know. I feel like in the gaming industry, sorry to say, but sometimes hot like just to be nice. I like being nice to people. I don't shit talk you when you're online. Ooh, hot take. I actually think gaming should be for everybody. Ooh, hot take. I don't know.
I'm with you, because I think there's a standpoint now where, because it's so competitive among studios and the rush to get games out because of where the money all works and everything, it makes it so competitive that it's so toxic everywhere. So it's almost a taboo thing to be nice now, in
Yeah.
anywhere in the gaming space. Like I've said about microtransactions, they're an evil, yes, but actually they're probably okay if they're policed okay. Will we ever get to that? I have no idea. But because they're here to stay, I'm okay with that. And
That is
then,
I think that is, I think, oh, I actually have a hot take.
here we go.
Yeah, but you are not allowed to use this as a TikTok clip because I don't want it to be a TikTok clip. I don't dare saying this. But
Gonna write it down, no
yeah,
worries.
just sorry everyone. No, but I am sorry to say, but 80 quid for a game is acceptable. I am sorry. And I know it's a hot take, but I have two arguments for this. One, they have always cost 80 quid. Like technically games have just been cheaper and cheaper and cheaper over the year of the inflation. So when Zelda came out, when all of these big games did come out in the 90s, we paid that for it. It's just that our parents paid for it. And also we bought two to four games a year. And we rented the rest. We did not buy 150 games a year. And I saw somebody on Facebook the other day saying, like, yeah, but then I'm just going to play one of the 1600 games I have on Steam. And I was just like, I don't think you understand from a marketing perspective. I don't think you understand that that is just positive for the marketers. Because if you're willing to have 1600 games you have never touched, even, but you spent money on it. They can get 20 more quids out of you from 60 to 80. And yeah.
You're not alone though. Will it help
No?
if I tell you you're not alone? Because we had a guy called Casual Gamer Doc on, and
Yeah.
he basically said the same thing. He said that games that cost 60 to 80 quid, it's the going rate. It's just the fact that the market, there's so many games that a touch of a button kids can have, adults can have. But the temptation is there to go and get. Whereas back in the olden days, where we used to go into the stores and have to actually physically go there, the effort made it more of it. So, like you just said, we get a game a month or four games a year or whatever we did. And so we just treasured that amount of money more.
Yeah. And
Whereas now it's like you buy a game for 80 quid, it sits there for 2 weeks, you play it, and then maybe you leave it alone again and buy another one.
yes. And the thing is that not all games will be 80 to 100 quid. Like this is, we're talking about a few selection of games. There will always be the really inexpensive games that are still an amazing experience. Doki Doki Literature Club silly, Billy, dumbest game ever, but oh my God, it is a story worth checking out one day. Stardew Valley, Dave the Diver, Subnautica. Well, Subnautica now, we'll see how that happens. But when it came out, there are you, and the market is so big that we do have room for the high end gamers, and they will sell. When GTI 6 comes out and it will be 100 quid, people will buy it. I have to say, though, and to the defense, though, easy for me to say, which this is my job. So it's a bit different because, like, I should be a bit silent about it because this is my job. So, I, for me, buying a game also now is sort of a business expense. So I should be a bit quiet about it. And I am 100% understanding that I am a bit in a different space than a regular consumer. So just calling myself a bit out here.
No, but it's, I mean, it's obviously, I mean, fair play to everyone that viewpoint. But at the same time, you are still correct in many respects because I've said it on the podcast before, get my words out, that I think the ability to miss is missing from gaming. Because, like you said, where you'd have your one game a month or one game a year, even some people, you treasured that game. So you complete it and play it multiple times. Whereas nowadays, people get a 60, £80, £100 game with all the DLCs and stuff. Whether they get their worth out of it is completely up to them. But because of the speed things are coming out at and the amount of stuff you've had access to, it's rare you do get the full amount out of them. Like you buy a pick a game, Resident Evil, that takes 4 hours to complete, but you complete it multiple times. So the cost would still be the same in terms of value for money. Whereas now you buy a Assassin's Creed for £80, it's long and empty. You feel like you've completed nothing. And you feel like it's worthless. So it's there's never that like ability to miss stuff yet. You don't have that one game you treasure and just play and play and play and play and play.
Yeah, and I also think that, like, I love being online. I love the online space, but one of the backside of it is also you see what you're missing. Like, when we grew up, not to say that everything was better because it was absolutely not. I think people reminiscing of old school games don't remember every game that got shipped buggy. Like, you can legit buy a game that was so buggy that you couldn't finish it and with nothing you can do about it. They would not give you your money back. They would not give you a new copy, nothing. Like, the things we have today are a lot of luxury things. Or, no, not luxury, as it should be. That is a better word because it's not luxury, it's as it should be. Consumers should get what they're buying. They should never get what they're not buying. That is not okay. And but it's also saying something with another hot take I have, and that is that mobile games are not bad. Like, they are, or they might be bad, but they're not, like, they're still games and they are valuable resource of gaming. I have a lot of fun with mobile games, like a lot of fun with them. I play a lot of it. I love those, like, idle games. You take a game and then you, like, oh, you have a factory that makes, like, cookies, and then, oh, you get money, and then you log on after 3 hours. Oh my God, now you have 10,000 cookies. Oh my God. I love those kinds of games. I spend a lot of, or at least before, I spend a lot of time in hospitals and stuff, and they're just mindless fun. Instead of scrolling TikTok, which I also do, I do a cookie cutter game or something dumb. But then again, though, calling myself out here before the comments could do so, I have the restraint to not use money on those games. So it opens up a really, really big black box of, like, gambling and people having problem with money, which is a legit problem. But for me, who doesn't have that problem, I love mobile games. Have all of these silly mobile games. I think they are quite fun.
I mean, I was having a conversation with someone about this podcast, about the type of people I'm having on. And I was like, I won't name the guy, but there's someone I want to have on this podcast. He's not necessarily what you'd call a gamer, but he plays mobile games. So I was like, he's a gamer then. This podcast is about learning about people. It's about figuring out the gamer within somebody. That person can be any kind of walk of life. If they play a game, they're a gamer. And so, yeah, mobile games, and also with mobile games, like you said there about the whole idle thing, it reminds you of a time from yonder year because those games where you leave it for a little while and then come back, it teaches you patience. It teaches you to stick with something like a Tamagotchi or whatever, like those old school things you used to have that used to live with you day in, day out. So,
The
yeah,
problem right
exciting.
now is, like, it is sort of like a Tamagotchi, but the problem now is that you can cheat it by buying things. So it's sort of like, yeah, I don't know, but I have fun with them. I saw now that, like, Subnautica has now the original Subnautica game now has a mobile version, so you can like play it on your phone. Which one, saying how incredibly powerful mobiles are now, and two, you can get shit bat crazy lying in your bed playing Subnautica. So hey, because like that is one of the most scary game I've ever played. Every time I hear the sound of a Reaper, I still get chills on my back and going like, I am going. I would chuck that phone across the room faster than anything if I was playing and then turn around and I saw a Reaper.
That is an amazing segue because the next portion of our podcast is always coaches' questions. Now, I ask questions on my page, and this is a chance to get two, three, or four, depending on time, of those questions and throw them at you randomly. And question one is literally, because I asked it yesterday, what's a video game sound that still haunts you?
Oh, Subnautica.
There we go.
Yeah, it is
Nicely done.
Subnautica, it is. And then every single sound that is like you're going out of oxygen, you're drowning, all of those kind of sounds. But yeah, the roaring in Subnautica, any single game that has, I can't stand games that has something coming behind you and you have to just continue going without looking back. And if you look back, you're just like, yeah. So I think, yeah, Subnautica, no, that roaring, I can't deal with it.
I think games stick with you though, because I've said this before about Metroid, the Metroid games with the screechy. I call it lava, but it isn't lava when you're down below and you can't breathe and you come back up again. Any kind of boss fight that's got a screech in it, any kind of screech, I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah. Oof. Or the Pokemon one, the when you play Pokemon and the like alarm going off because your Pokemon is nearly dying. And then, yeah, you cried as a kid because now your whole team got whipped out. Yeah.
Okay. And all these questions are open to interpretation, just so you're fully aware. But which game surprised you the most?
Ooh, that's hard. So I have a game that is, I hate it and I love it at the same time. And that is Outer Wilds. I think that is what it's called. It's I'm not going to talk about the game itself because it's an experience. It is Outer Worlds is called. Yeah, it's like the it is an experience where you're on a planet and you go into a aircraft or a spacecraft and then you can visit on the planets. And in that way, it happens a story. But the story will only be locked up if you figure it out. So it's a story that happens before your eyes. And that game was so hard and had so many cognitive accessibility or cognitive barriers that really annoys me and like made me literally scream at the screen at my stream for playing this game. I hated it. But the story, there's something about that story, something about finding another person in space, sitting under a tree, playing a banjo, just waiting, just waiting. Completely silent, just waiting. And all of these like little heartstring moments, that one, oh, I as I said, like I will never play it again because I got so fucking pissed off the controllers. But the story is just a story I wish everybody can get to experience one day because it's incredible. And I think I love those kinds of games. Those games that I keep saying Subnautica. I've read too much about Subnautica 2 lately. I keep remembering that. But like games where you don't technically understand everything that is happening, but by just playing the game, the story unfolds. The story isn't laid in front of you. You have to figure it out yourself. I love those kinds of games.
I had that with Baldur's Gate 3. So I never played Baldur's Gate. Well, I played Dark Alliance a little bit, but Baldur's Gate 3 was that a wholly different experience for me because I was like, you play, I don't know, linear games or RPGs or something, and there's like a story to follow. And there is obviously a story in Baldur's Gate, but time is also a thing when you're an adult. You don't always have a lot of it. So I was able to jump into Baldur's Gate, spend an hour just doing literally anything random in any direction and building my own stories. And it was the most awesome experience I've ever had, I think, gaming, because it opened my eyes a little bit. Okay, next one is, what is the best slash most random recommendation for a game you've ever got?
I ever gotten? Oh God, no, I can't even say that. I'm a streamer. Have you ever like people can see my stream tag? The amount of weird games I get sent we I there is names of games I can't even say on this podcast, even if I'm allowed to swear. Steam has so many horrible games, I cannot even. So I have had to hide so many games, and people keep sending me the weirdest stuff. But I don't know, like I don't get that much recommendation anymore because I'm so in it that like if there is something, I will most likely see it. Like because my so I have a day job where I am an accountant for a research facility, and then I do this, so I'm like split 50-50 my time. So I start like every week listening to all the gaming podcasts, figuring out what's coming, looking at all this stuff. So nothing surprises me anymore. Sadly, though, because it used to be a bit more like, oh, this game comes out, let's just check it out. But when it is your job, things change a bit. Not negatively, because I absolutely love it, but you don't get that same thing. You have to keep on top of things. So yeah.
And then more of a common question, but what are some of your comfort games? Or do you thrive on just fear and adrenaline?
This is so fun because it shouldn't be a comfort game, but RimWorld is a game I often come back to because I just really enjoy it. I just feel like I can sink time and energy because it is. So RimWorld is like we have like small pawns. It's a top-down view, XY axis, and then you get sent to a new world. You crash land, it's pixelated, and you have to like just survive. And there is different scenes. You can have different scenarios. So you can start with one or three or five colonists, and then you just have to build your own colony and try to leave the planet. But that game is the perfect for me in between of I am engaging my brain without tiring my brain, and I am sucked into the game without feeling like I'm losing control kind of feel. Because some games actually have that. Like you sort of stop the game and you feel you're coming up for a breath of fresh air because you just have been so into it. But RimWorld is the perfect for me in between. I heard I would start a Valley as well. I'm actually going to take a look at my Steam. What am I playing? Yeah, I think a lot of those kinds of games I love. I have a little bit of some four or five friends. We're Norwegians and people from the UK. We play together. We play things like Repo and Valheim and Peak. Like we do a lot of those multiplayer games, and I like those. Sims are one I can always find time for. And once a year, I do the whole I can't deal with life anymore. So I will download Skyrim and all the mods. And for 1 week, I don't do anything else than breathe and think Skyrim. And then I stop playing it one day and then I don't touch it for a year again. Oh.
Because obviously we think about games that we have for comfort or for, we just relax into, and sometimes it doesn't even have to be relaxing. Chesterfield gamer relaxes with Doom; he loves it.
Absolutely. And I think also relaxing is different. Like my husband, he relaxed with like Dark Souls. I would legit do anything else in my whole life than to play Dark Souls. So like people do different things. People have different kind of ways of relaxing. He needs to be stressed. He needs to be frustrated because he can then get his frustration out in the game. But I need to not do that.
And then I suppose the sort of final question I'd have, and I love the sort of thing because you learn about the people that's you learn stuff you didn't necessarily know before, which I find is great. But what is one game people will be surprised to learn you haven't played?
Oh, that's a lot of them. Oh, that's a hard question. Like, I never played Halo because I didn't have an Xbox growing up, so I never played that.
Not a PC, no? We can play Halo on PC.
I never played. I never played like. I don't. I have never. Well, no, I have played Fortnite, but I never played like that other shooter game. I don't play shooters, so like. Any of them? I think before it was Zelda, right? People were really like shocked I hadn't played Zelda. But I think sometimes people forget that when you grew up, you were in the like, you only got the games for the station, you were luckily enough, your parents bought for you. Like, if you, like, my parents bought me and my sister a PlayStation 1, so we have PlayStation games. I did not play Nintendo games because we didn't had one. So, yeah, it's just like that. Other games. Oh, I'm so bad at remembering. I struggle a bit with my memory sometimes. So it's just like, I know there are games I should, because people get like, in my chat and stuff, people go like, "Huh, how do we play that?" But I can't remember them. I guess
Yes.
I'm going to look at Steam. But if there were one with Steam, I would have played them.
Because what I love about the question though is people always say, "Oh, have you not played this? Or when did you not? Why have you not played that?" It's because, like you just said, we didn't always have access to it. We didn't even know about it in some cases.
Yeah.
And then it's like maybe I just don't like it. Maybe I don't want to play it.
And
Leave
being
me
like
alone.
being a girl growing up, like, gaming wasn't marketed towards girl at all. Like, today girls play, like, it's no problem. But like on the 90s, you didn't do that as a girl. Like, you didn't. You weren't a nerd. That was not a thing for girls to be in the 90s. Maybe some places it was easier, but that was not a thing to do. Like, no. Girls were girls and boys were boys, in quite separated category. So when I, a girl, started hanging out with the boys and go like, "Oh my God, Pokemon!" And I had one other girlfriend at school who played Pokemon, and we were just like, we are so nerds. But people didn't do that. So then, and a lot of the other games, like Pokemon, that's okay. That a lot of girls play that. But then you had like Halo, COD, like most of the violent games. Like, I snuck off to play like GTA when I was a kid, because of course I wasn't allowed because it was too violent. And so like there was just another world. And I remember I ended up going into a PC club when I was younger, so I got sent like a lot of really weird ass games. But some of the PC clubs divided you by gender. So when you were a girl, you got like horse games and stuff like that. And then the boys got like math games and stuff like that. I think you could choose and stuff, but there's always been this thing of girl gamers. That is why like cozy gaming has gotten such a big like updo the last couple of years, because we are just like, hey, we are allowed to game as well. And also we are allowed to like what we like. Gaming isn't just this really specific violent kind of game, even though I actually enjoy violent games, but it isn't just that. So yeah, I think I have missed a lot of games growing up, and it's too bad, but what can you do? It's just how it is.
But you've always got a chance to go back. You can always
Yeah.
go back there, especially nowadays where there's more and more access to things, a lot more retro compilations, and the consoles are still there, and there's a lot coming on to like Steam and Game Pass and stuff like that. So there's always a
And
chance you might see some of these.
I'm a big advocate for remakes, because like not only is it cool because people now finally can play games they didn't have access for as a kid, but we have so many more accessibility tools today that like my favorite game, Tomba, is for the PS1. But I had to stop playing it because my hands can't handle it. It's quite a finicky platformer, so you need to do a lot of strength with your hands. My hands can't handle that. So when it got remade for the PlayStation, Xbox and PC and Switch, I could use my modern accessibility tools on my modern controller and play the retro games from my childhood, my favorite game from my childhood.
It's so cool to hear those sort of things, because a lot of the times we hear arguments for why there's too many remakes, or gaming is it in a bad state right now because there's too much old IP and not enough new IP. But you are right, it does also bring light to have people that didn't have access to it play them, so it makes a lot of sense. We move into Creator Spotlight now, which is the last segment, but it's a chance to, or for you to share either creators you really enjoy, or if you're not comfortable doing that, it's completely fine. We don't need names, but especially someone as involved in the industry as you are, what type of content do you enjoy and why do you enjoy it?
So I enjoy a lot of different things. So the first my first introduction to Let's Plays, because streaming wasn't a thing when I started watching things online. That wasn't, we had Justin TV, but it wasn't, I don't even think Justin TV existed when I started watching YouTube Let's Play. So I started actually watching Yogscast play Minecraft, and they made a series called Shadow of Israfel for many, many moons ago, many, 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 many years ago. So I most of my because I started there, most of the things I watch today is actually like still YouTube's. I don't watch that much streams. And I don't know why, because I think I still have this feeling of, oh, if I watch a stream, I need to be active at it. And I don't have that much time to do that. I still do it. Like, I have some friends that I really enjoy being with their community, but I'm still quite of that person who do YouTube. And on YouTube, I do watch everything. I watch Let's Play of games I cannot catch up on myself because I don't have time. I watch a lot of horror games because I love horror games, can't handle to play them myself, so I watch them. A lot of 100%ing because people do like 100% of this in that game, which again, can't do myself. Don't have time for that as a grown up right now in my grown up life. So I love seeing others that take their time to do that and like actually, yeah, make that space. So yeah, I do mostly watch YouTubes. But if there is some like creators I want to shout out, if it's okay to shout them out.
Of course, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. I would, so I'm going to start with something silly Billy big, but I think it's such a silly Billy big thing that is important for people to know about. And that is something called Games Done Quick. I watch a lot of speed running. I love speed running. I think it's incredibly fun to watch. And Games Done Quick is an organization that twice a year come together to raise money for a foundation, often Doctors Without Borders. And then for 1 week, 24/7, they play speedruns and they raise money. And twice a year, they raise over $2 million for this charity. Games Done Quick is the largest contributor to Doctors Without Borders today. And I think it's extremely important. Highly recommend people checking it out. If you ever have a game from your childhood and you're wondering, can anybody do that good? Yes, there is somebody on Games Done Quick. They even have a section called Games Done Bad, which is bad games or bad games done quick or something like that. It's bad games, really, really bad games from your childhood that they try to do quick. So, yeah. Also, have other creators that I watch a lot, like Twisted Shape, UK. I just like him. He's really, really nice. I think he has had a bit of a hiatus. But I really enjoy his content. And he is a good male representation without knowing he is. Because I love that I can sit in his chat and he's a man who are open about things, but and in a way I see his comment section that it hits other men. So he opens to Latin community. I don't think he actually knows that he does it, but just sitting there and seeing his community just being so, I don't know, so welcoming. And he is also like a no bullshit kind of dude. So he's not because we need I am a creator that is touchy, feely, feely, touchy kind of person. And he is not, but then that gives a space for men to talk and yeah, just absolutely amazing. And he's funny and he plays a lot of cool games and he does a lot of cool stuff. So yeah. And then you have Wade Lady. Oh, she is amazing. She does cozy games. So if you absolutely love cozy games like Palia and Coral Island, Stardew Valley, everything cozy, Wade Lady, go check her out. She's amazing. I was thinking about somebody else. Now it's just if you're live right now when we're recording this, so I'm going through my Twitch followers, seeing who I can shout
It's
out.
tough because we what I love about this segment is it wasn't there's a number of things, but it's hard to nail down a few because there are so many. But the fact there are so many for so many people, like you've had yourself and all the other guests that have been on, about this like this long list essentially. The fact there's so many people for them to shout out is fucking fantastic because it means
Yes.
there is a safe space out there that everyone's enjoying, and there isn't just these massive, dare I say, massive creators that are just hogging the space.
I,
Every single person's got a little community of their own, and I love that.
yeah, like every time I like every Every time I end up somewhere outside my typical sphere of people and gamers, there is just somebody that is a partner streamer I've never heard about. I don't think people realize how many popular people there are out there that they have never heard about. But if you want to look for like getting to talk to more disabled streamers, there is a stream team called the, I need to find it. This Disabled Content Creators Collective, so DCCC, which is a creator collective of different disabled streamers and chronically ill streamers. So then, if you want to have a community, because growing up or being old and having to face a lot of things people don't face at our age normally, to talk to and feel like a safe space, I would highly recommend going there and checking out the people there. Yeah, I think that like quickly there is of course a million other people. They're huge and small streamers, and people do a lot of good things. But that was the one on top of my mind right now.
And just to piggyback on something you just said, but also to extend my point a little bit, the fact that, because I've said the internet is at a point where it's endless. Like you just said there's people that are so popular that you've never even heard of, which is wild. So there's always someone around another corner of the internet that you've not seen yet. And that in itself is cool. But what it means is, whether or not one person watches you, or 15,000 or whatever it's watch you, you're affecting someone.
Yes.
And someone somewhere will like it or dislike it, but they will resonate with it. And so it's you're having an impact regardless. So there's always a different impact somewhere else. I think
Yes.
that's so cool.
Yes, and we talked about a lot like the impact I do, and like the impact I do is like quite on the nose impact. Like we're changing you're teaching somebody to game again or whatever, like the on the nose impact. But I don't think people understand that having a community, that is an impact. That is a really important impact. Making people laugh, that is an important impact. Making people smile, important impact. We are humans. We need emotions, or just having a space where people can come and cry because you play sad games and there is somewhere you can feel something. These are impacts. That is not that it that has nothing to do with numbers and everything to do with impact. And also I think also people, because people go and check out my stream or check out my TikTok, and they will see that in the grand scheme, I'm an extremely small content creator. I'm in what you call like a nano content creator. I'm so small. And I still have a lot of getting to do a lot of cool things because I have a really special niche. So if you're a content creator with like a really special niche, keep on doing it because people want to work with people with niche. Like retro gaming is a niche, cozy gaming is a niche, accessibility in gaming is a niche. Like you can find your little home where having 10 views or 100 views on TikToks actually is something people that want to work with you and sponsors actually see for. Because if you just in general do gaming, then yeah, we may have to start talking about tens and thousands of views to be anything. But if you do something really, really niche, like I have worked with big, big names and like made a TikTok for them, and I was just like, oh yeah, my TikTok got 1,000 views, but like had a lot of comments, and they were just like, yes, because they knew that those 1,000 people on TikTok, that was a lot of the people they wanted to reach with the help of something that is really, really niche. So yeah, numbers is just that. It's just numbers. You can mix and tricks them into whatever you want.
I mean, I've said this many times, but if a sponsor or an expo or any kind of press junket or anything wants to include me, I'm more than welcome. more than willing. This is the bit I really love. Now, you've mentioned some of it already, which is great, but flip the narrative a little bit. Why should someone be following you?
I think that my typical goal or typical I don't remember the English name. Target audience are divided. You should follow me if you are a developer because you have things to learn that can easily change the way you view designing your game that can make it so that more people play your games. You can do small incremental changes that can end up having impact for years to come by parts of your community. And I do also like knowledge streams. I do streams where I actually make documents you can download so that you learn something and you can have it forever, teach and learn and continue growing as a developer. And if you are a gamer and you have somebody around you or you yourself have ever experienced that life doesn't go your way, well, you're welcome because the thing I'll teach you, the things I can teach on my streams and on my TikToks is that no matter what life face you can always game. I have yet now to have yet not have a case where we couldn't make somebody stream or somebody play a game, I mean. I have yet not had a case where somebody couldn't play a game. You might not be able to play every single game, but you will always be able to game. We can make things, incredible things happen by the help of accessibility. Oh, you lost an arm. It's horrible. It sucks when life gives you those kinds of cards, but don't worry, gaming will be there for you. There is a lot of games you can play with one arm. There's a lot of tools you can do. There's a lot of tools we can find, one-handed controllers, stuff like that. Oh, you had a problem, like you have been burned out cognitively. You can't like handle as much stress anymore. Do not worry. We have difficulty settings and everything. It's just about like knowing when you need the help and how to use that knowledge to game. So yeah, come learn some more. Come learn that people around you or you and the friends you play with, you can always play a game no matter what.
Well, this is, I mean, we call this Champion the Gamer for a reason. And I think it's important that the people that are on here get their shine because what you do does, as you said earlier, make an impact. And it really highlights ways and means that people can get involved in this medium. And even if not gaming, it's just being involved in the social circles or just learning something new. And I think that's such an amazing thing to do. You've got this wealth of knowledge on accessibility and everything like that. Are you pleased? And are you optimistic about where we are in gaming right now with accessibility?
Oh yeah, like I am always optimistic because I talk to the people every single day that does make a change. But it's so important to remember this. From a game is an idea to a game is in store, it's often 5, 4, 6 years. It can take years. So what you're struggling with right now, what we're missing right now, it is in the works. It's just in the works behind closed doors. It's not ready to be released. But every single year, I find games with new cool stuff. I opened Grounded today because I wanted to check out something before the Grounded 2 comes out. And in Grounded, I found a new option I've never seen before, which is wide interaction. And it's so cool. Wide interaction just means that so when you go up to an object, you need to look at the object or somewhat look at the object to be able to click it. But a wide interaction makes that you can be more skewed. You don't need to be directly on to still click on the object. Who does this help? Well, people who don't have fine motor skills. So it's harder for them to like go and completely hone into one thing. Okay, that's really, really cool. I didn't even know this existed and it came in a patch I didn't even know about. Every single time a developer put a game out there, every single time an indie developer talks to the community, it makes change. Yes, when we look at the big names like Microsoft firing 9,000, it's really quick to feel defeated. But that's an industry. That's that we're talking now a company. The humans want to do things better. I have never yet met a developer saying, "No, I don't want this person to play my game." They just want to let you play their game. So I know that this game is positive to have accessibility. I know people want to do it. They might not want to do it the same way I want to do it, but in the end, all everybody of us want to do is to have fun. And gaming is big enough for all of us to have our own pockets to have fun in. You might not have fun everywhere, but that is okay. You don't need to do that. So, yes, like it's so easy to be pulled down by the news and stuff. But when you actually start talking to the people, when you actually start to just put away those hate TikTokers, put away those hate streamers and hate gamers, you see that 90% of everybody out there just wants to improve, just want everybody to be able to game. And also we have, all of us have like an egoistic things in the background going like, I want to game when I'm 90 years old and in an old folk home. So just have to make the game accessible now.
We've all got that dream of sitting there doing nothing but gaming.
Yeah. Lawn parties at old folks home.
Barbecue. I'm down. One thing I wanted to say was, is what I love about certain people, and obviously you're one of these, but there's obviously quite a few, is I'd get drawn to people that have this magnetic feel to them. And that can come in a number of different ways. And the way you do that and the way you have that is because you're so passionate about it, and there's a joy there. There's always a thing where you're putting a smile on something that's, it could be quite a taboo subject, frankly. There's a lot to talk about. It's not an easy subject. And that could be the same for a number of different things. But in this case, obviously, it can be quite tricky for people to do, especially if they're going through it themselves, let's say.
Yes.
And it's something they're coming to terms with. Even me with glasses on. I didn't have glasses when I was a kid. That could have been more difficult for me. Obviously, it wasn't. It's a bad example. But I'm just saying it could have been something I didn't accept straight away. So to have people like yourself that make this stuff seem okay and optimistic and good looking for, that's such an amazing talent and gift to have. So I'd urge anyone that doesn't know you, which by this point is by some miracle, just go and check you out at least once, because you'll learn something, and there'll be something that you won't have even thought about.
Yeah.
And that in turn is also something I love, because people that offer something new and different and their own slant, and that engages me. So yeah, like I say, just go and check out Arivia at any point you can, because it's something you should be doing.
Thank you.
This has been fabulous. I've had such an amazing time. And we always finish with this, but is there anything you want to finish with?
Anything I want to finish with? No, because I'm Norwegian. Funny joke. Yeah, it took you some time there.
No, I got it. I was just like...
Oh, with that kind of humor, you should believe I was a dad. No, I want to finish up with like what you said, because you said like... my content is there for you when you need it. If you're going through something right now and you cannot deal with it, be angry. Do grieve the loss of the life you thought you would have. Because I hate when people say to me, when I have to deal with something, and they go, it will be good in the end. Yes, it will, but I don't want that right now. I want to be angry. So be angry. Be sad. Be frustrated. Have the grief. Have the moment of grief, the life you thought you would have. When that is done, we are here. Not just me, a million other content creators and gamers and people that want to play games with you. We want to like let you have fun. We want to play games with you. We want you to feel enjoyment again and feel like empowerment in games again. So when you're ready, or right now, go and check out what we do, not only me. You have Steel Sailor, you have Sightless Combat, you have Laura K. Buss, you have Molly Evans, you have Hello is Colo, people of all kinds and people who do all kind of different things that can match you and your needs, or you and your content, what you like to watch, and have fun. And if you are completely 100% able-bodied and sitting here and going like, oh, this is cool, but what can I do? What you can do is normalizing it. When you have a new game, when you get a new game, go into the settings. Just take a look. Because you might not need it, but then a friend of you are in an accident. Or a friend of you have a child that is born with something. Or your mom is struggling with something. Or your dad, things just doesn't work the way they used to. And somewhere in your mind then you go, oh my God, I saw this option once. Or oh my God, I played this game once. Just start thinking. You can be the part. You can be part of normalizing it. You don't need to have a disability to have fun and enjoy accessibility. And if you are a content creator yourself, whenever you stream a new game, just quickly go into the options, go, oh, accessibility. Let's take a look at it and go like, hey, cool, community, if anybody you are struggling with anything of this, here's how it is. Okay, guys, now continue the game. Like, it doesn't need to be a big thing. Just normalize it.
I'm going to make a statement now. And you're episode 68. And other than my wife, you're probably my favorite episode. Because I think it's just such a mate. Yeah, I've loved it, because there's stuff that, and I'm probably a bit lucky in the sense that I've got a chance to work with a lot of different backgrounds, different needs, different, all kinds of different things within sports.
Yeah.
I've done it for the last 20, 25 years even. God, I'm old. And It's just something where I've learned to, as you said there, normalize it. My
Mm-hmm.
goals were to normalize it. I mean, I had a big thing about getting women's sports going in my local area and all this kind of different stuff. But it's lovely to hear that there is this, dare I say, market for learning that people are really cultivating, and people like yourselves are obviously doing that. So I can't wait for people to hear it, because it's something people need to get on board
Yeah.
with and
And
get an ear into.
it is so important also to understand that you can't know what you don't know. So don't feel bad for not knowing. Don't feel bad for anything. Just know that you know from now on and continue. Like you can learn today and you can learn tomorrow and you can learn, yeah, whenever. We never stop learning and we never stop having fun. And games are the perfect combination of both of those.
And I couldn't prepare myself. You've been episode 68, and I'll catch everybody on the next one.